Today's Purim morning, and we are learning the hidden message of Esther, what lies beneath the text. The thesis is based on a Maimar Chazal that says that when the Gemara in Maseches Chulin asks, Esther min HaTorah minayin, where do we have a reference of Esther in the biblical text? The Gemara asks about Mordechai and about Esther and Achashverosh. You can find it about Haman. Where is Haman in the Torah? Interesting, it's not a Gemara in Megillah. This is a Gemara in Chulin, right? I think Megillah, the Agadah section, should have this question. But instead, the Gemara in Chulin asks it, and it is asked about Esther. You don't have Yecheskel min HaTorah minayin. You don't have Shmuel min HaTorah minayin. You don't have Yeshayahu min HaTorah minayin, right? You don't have David and Shaul min HaTorah minayin. What's all this obsession with Esther, Haman, Achashverosh? Where do we have this? Because the book of Esther's canonicity was questioned. Right? It's also why it's not represented at all in the Dead Sea Scrolls. We still have not found a single reference to Purim. The canonicity was obviously questioned in many circles. So when the Gemara, by already knowing that Esther was included in the Brisa in Maseches Bava Basra, that the Daf Yomi learned a few weeks ago, that is part of Tanakh. So when that opinion was looking to insert into the Talmud every place it could, ideas that you should no longer question the canonicity of Esther, it belongs in Tanakh. So where is Esther in the Torah? So everybody knows, Vanochi Aster, Astir Panayim Yikem Bayomahu, I will hide my face from you. And the manifestation of this Gemara, everybody says, is the fact that God's name does not appear in the book. Right? However, the thesis of this shiur this morning is that it goes beyond that. It's that the story of Esther is a hidden story. There's a lot more than just what's in the story. Because the story itself, the rabbis were right. What is in this story? Did you see any major moral message in this story? You look under P for Purim in Encyclopedia Judaica, you'll see 200 such events have taken place in our history. You know, some more miraculous than this in nature, with it. The last minute, a destruction of a whole area was forestalled because of a late decree or something that was changed. And all right, this one includes quite a long series of Medinas, right?
But this is over a longer period. This is a long period of time.
Okay, all right. No doubt, this is something special. This is Purim with a capital P. But nonetheless, I don't see there's this fasting. It's true. She says, "Gather the Jews."
Why did he take a lottery? Why Purim?
That's the way Haman did things. He was a necromancer. He was a diviner. He decided the date that comes out of this hat for the month, the date that comes out of this hat for the date, that's going to be the best date for me. That's the way they do things back then. Anyway, this is why the Gemara in Megillah, Dav Zayin, discusses all the trouble that the original authors of this book had it, that it should be accepted. Kivuni the Doris, Kisvuni the Doris. No, there's nothing special about this story. The generation of that own time, they thought that there was nothing special.
Who did they believe is the author of this?
Ezra. Gemara says Anshe Knesset HaGadol. Right. Remember, the book is also written in Chutz Laaretz. The story does not take place in Israel. All right. But that's our first hidden message. If you look at the last page, you see it says political, moral, historical. You see that? Political, moral, historical. And as even on the first page, religious. There are religious messages, there are political messages, there are moral messages, there are historical messages. And I start with the... Let's start with the political. Okay? Let them go to the circle. Okay? You have to recall that Achashverosh, when it says Hamoleich Mehodu Ve'Akush, is not the son of the previous king. Right? So I would admit that there are debates amongst the historians and the Mefarshim over whether this story takes place before the Second Temple is rebuilt or sometime after the Second Temple is rebuilt. I think the more common scholarly opinion is it's quite a bit later. The Gemara says that it's somewhat before, that the Achashverosh made the Cheshbon, that the 70 years were up, the Jews were not returning. And hence, I'm celebrating that. They survived. They survived Ashur, they survived Bavel, but they're not surviving Paras. So that's what the party was. So if the party was in celebration of the fact that they're not building their temple, right, and the fact that the Jews not only attended such an event, but enjoyed it, right? Al shenehenu mis'udas Achashverosh, right? You following? So that is why Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says Mipnei Ma Zochu. What were they observant of Kliya, of destruction at that time? Because they not only attended, they may have felt that politically they needed to attend such an event. The king is throwing an event; we all have to attend, but you don't have to enjoy it. So thanks so much, Nazi. Thank you. So when the issue is that when the Gemara says that Ahasuerus took out all of the old kalim that the Babylonians had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, right? The ones that Belshazzar, Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, was drinking from, and Sefer Daniel, when the handwriting came on the wall to say he's about to be destroyed by the Persians, right? So Cyrus gave permission for the Jews to take back those kalim, right? This is all described in the beginning of Sefer Ezra, chapter 1, and it says he returned a total of 5,400 kalim. I made reference to this yesterday. 5,400 kalim were brought back to the Jews as part of rebuilding the temple. The shovels and the spoons and the bazichin and the bowls and the big larger kalim, the smaller kalim, a lot of silver, gold, tremendous value to these things. And the remember when the Medrash says that there was a 180-day festival, and it says chel parasu modai. Right, you see the numbers I wrote there on the fourth line, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You see that? Besidrei Amdinos, and underneath it says Osher Kavod Malchuso VeEsyakar Tiferes Gedulaso. There's six different types of grandeur to five different types of people. See, 6 times 5 times 180. That's the pasuk in Ezra, Aleph Yud Aleph. That's the 5,400. So, well, you know, this is the drash, but it underlies a larger pshat that the Medrash is capturing, that chapter 1 of Esther shows that for the Jews, Shushan has replaced Yerushalayim. It's not Yerushalayim Habira, it's Shushan Habira. It's not the Chatzar of the Beis HaMikdash, it's the Chatzar of Ahasuerus' palace. The grandeur of these particular words, we mentioned yesterday, Tiferes, right, Agamon, Chelas, these colors, this description, these are all things that you remember just from yesterday's Torah reading, right? And 2 weeks ago, and a week ago yesterday. So this is the political issue, that there's something hidden in this story beyond Shushan that goes to Yerushalayim. And when you add chapter 4 of Sefer Ezra, where it says that the Jews were returned to build the temple, but a king made them stop, that king was Ahasuerus. It's the only time he's mentioned outside of Megillat Esther. If we say it's the same Ahasuerus, the Persian kings named kings with the same name. There were a few different Xerxes, right? But if you want to say it's the same Ahasuerus, and that's what these Mefarshim are saying, of course, it is that he was just a smaller version of Haman. It's just that Haman was so rare, Kol HaYehudim. And while I was reading the Megillah, it just dawned on me, the gematria of Hamelech and Haman is the same. So Ahasuerus was... You know, he's caught up. This is now back to the political. Is that he is very paranoid since he's not the son of the king. The kingdom he realizes, just like I took it from someone, someone can take it from me. Right?
Who knows that it went to the woman?
Once he kills Vashti, does he have that same fear?
Right.
Now,
so
Vashti's the.
Vashti represents the royalty. That's why when he tells her to come out,
she doesn't want to come out because she's the Bubba.
He's the king. He can.
I mean, I think you have to look at, you know, historically.
Bubba's not a power anymore.
Women didn't have power.
Bubba's not a power anymore. So now you see, when he tells her to come out the way he does, it's not just boorish, churlish Persian attitudes. The Babylonians were very cultured and very scientific. The Persians were churlish and boorish. Look at the way they behave. Nebuchadnezzar surrounds himself in Sefer Daniel with scientists and thinkers, and Ahasuerus surrounds himself with drinkers. So and what is it to have his wife come out? It says that the Gemara says that the Persians were saying the Persian women are more beautiful. The Medes were saying the Mede women are more beautiful. And Ahasuerus says, the Kli that I work with, the Kli that I use is more beautiful than both of them, and I'm going to show you, right? So he wants, and you see it says twice, to take Vashti HaMalka, to come out, right? Bekesem Malchus, you know what the Gemara says with that, right? So, So so when she refuses, look how the text.
So she shows her
act.
She's showing.
Right. So what is this? Is this Ralph Cramden here? You have to show that you're the king of the castle. But what is this? It's not just men and women here. It's Persia Babylonia here. It's showing that look, we won the last war. Right.
You're saying Vashti's the daughter of the Babylonian.
That's his granddaughter. So she represents an old order that Ahasuerus wants out. So it's more than just men and women. That's another hidden message here. So Ahasuerus surrounds himself with a lot of men who give him this advice here about the wife, and there about getting a new
sounds
wife.
Like this.
So,
of course
so
they would.
Thank you.
So, but notice that in the beginning of the story, you see that the boxes now. This is the. The box also. Okay, so you see, Ahasuerus surrounds himself with a lot of advisors. Right, advisors always tell him what to do. Right, advisors. He doesn't sneeze without calling a meeting. Of what to do about the sneeze. Right?
Haman and Trump have the same Gematria.
Oh, yeah.
I just worked it out in my head.
It's racial. Oh,
it's
okay.
Joe.
It's all right, so there's some spreads in
there. Here.
Okay,
it's good.
All right, so hold on. But what happens at a certain point in the story is that Ahasuerus no longer surrounds himself with anybody except one trusted advisor. Because after the threat to his life, he says, you know, this could be Julius Caesar, this could be Netu Brute, I don't know, which is Marcin, so many guys around me, maybe there's a conspiracy here. So he decides, I'm just going to get one trusted friend, surround myself with him. And chapter 3, till the end, when Harbona speaks, no one but Haman speaks to Ahasuerus. Right? As an advisor. So it has that topsy-turvy aspect to it, because that's the nafochu aspect of not only Purim, but our history. I digress, that's the Yom Kippur connection. Yom Kippur has, we come to God, we beg you, God, I'm coming to you and saying that my life could have been very different this past year, just on a dime. You know, and only you know what that's about. I'm just trying to tell you I'm trying better. Right? I messed up 1,000 times this past year. But only you know how life is such a game of inches. Life is a go-rav. Right? That's why the holiday is called Purim. He peeled pur hu avarav. So what determines whether this goat goes with all the sins of Israel on its shoulders, between its horns, or it goes holy to God? It's a go-rav, the same thing. You get it? The go-rav aspect of Yom Kippur and Purim makes it Yom Kippur, you get it? So the nafochu aspect of this story is that in the beginning of the story, his best friend convinces him to kill his wife, and at the end of the story, his wife convinces him to kill his best friend. So it's like Jewish history. We can enjoy great freedoms now, and then Ve'yakom Melech Chadosh, and a new decree is in town. So that's how, it's sort of the impetuosity of Ahasuerus himself. That's what he did. Stone him. Hang him. Right? That's what he did. Okay. All right. You want to kill him? Okay. Maybe you should have a meeting. I mean, you had a meeting about what to do with a rebellious wife who didn't want to come out with just a crown on her head. You had to have a big state meeting. You don't have a meeting to discuss whether we should kill a million people? You just say, here's the money. But want to kill him? Okay. Want to save him? Okay. Want to hang him on swords? Okay. It's Ahasuerus. It's like he's a child.
His best friend, closest advisor.
It's crazy.
Or is it that he starts out needing everybody to tell him what to do, and now he evolves into being his own man, and he can make his own decisions. Because his wife telling him what to do. Then. But
you hear, Haman is very assertive. What does the king want to do to someone he honors? He goes on and on, of course, thinking it's himself. You know, he has advice right away. So here I want to tell you another thing, an historical point. And this you might miss, but now I want to do the triangles. The Gemara says that when Ahasuerus first was deciding about what to do about his wife, he didn't go to the 7 first. He went to the Sanhedrin first. But I want you to see the deeper meaning of this. It's very questionable that Paro would go to, that Ahasuerus would go to the Sanhedrin. But
think,
it's Gemara in Megillah. But see the underlying message of this Gemara. It's a deeper meaning, and I think it's profound. The Gemara says that when the rabbis heard Ahasuerus ask them advice, they were impressed that, you know, okay, the king wants to hear from us. But they said the following. They made the following cheshbon. Right? You know what I mean? So the Gemara says that the rabbis were worried. If we tell him to kill his wife, and then he wakes up tomorrow morning and saying he misses her,
no wedding.
He's going to kill. He's going to get angry with us. All those rabbis, they told me. And if he doesn't, and if he goes the other direction, right? Then he's saying, why did the rabbi say I should let her live, and she's giving me all this trouble? So the rabbi said, you know what? Since our temple was destroyed, we have counsel has evaded us. We don't have counsel. We don't give good advice since the temple has been destroyed. So we're going to pass this one. We're going to punt. Please ask someone else. So what does this mean? What does this mean? What's the deeper message of this marriage? Please take some time. What is the deeper meaning of this message?
They had no standing.
It's not just they didn't have standards. They didn't feel they had standards.
They were afraid of their own shadows.
Correct. And that is manifest, I submit to you, in this Megillah, with all these triangular words. Look at them. What do they have in common? Is all.
Oh, they're he feel.
No.
They're all.
EOA, that's a template for which binyan? Nifal. Nifal is passive.
Nifal, I said he feels.
Vayi motzei, vayi koveitz,
vayi
vada, vayi kosei, vayi vukash. It's pu'al, hofal, and nifal. Those are three different binyanim in Hebrew that are passive. The rabbis became passive. They were satisfied that to let their masses enjoy a meal that was celebrating their. Powerlessness, and they said nothing.
Wasn't that the Gemara's criticism of Mordecai? Like all of this
later,
happened.
Later, the rabbi said, "Ritzu l'rov v'chav."
Right.
What do you mean, "Ritzu l'rov v'chav"? Yeah, Mordecai is liked by most Jews.
Mm-hmm. It's not us.
Now, I want to give you a pshat. L'rov v'chav means he was accepted by many Jews. When it says that Paro, he told his friends about Rov Banov, he wasn't talking about most of his children. He was talking about his many children. Right? Rov does not necessarily mean most of. It usually does.
Uh-huh.
And it can also mean many. Like Rav. Anyway. But the Gemara still makes a drash that the rabbis, Pirshu Mimenu Mikza Sanhedrin. The rabbis were not happy with what Mordechai ended up doing. Because he made the Jews too comfortable in Persia. Remember the underlying message, the political message. What are the Jews supposed to be doing now? Going back to Israel, preparing for the second Aliyah, if you will, preparing for rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash. This glorious king that you love so much, married to a Jew. This is at the end of the story now. But Mordechai is second in charge. This is why we don't say Hallel on Purim, because we're Avdei Achashverosh. We can't say Hallel the other day. That's another reason the Gemara gives. The Gemara gives that the Megillah is the Hallel today. We don't have a Megillah. So the Nafkamina would be, if Chas V'Shalom, someone is sick and they don't have a chance to hear the Megillah, they should say Hallel according to that answer. You have Megillah or Hallel. If you do Megillah, you don't have Hallel. If you don't have Megillah, you should do Hallel. Right, but there are other reasons. Anyway.
But as opposed to what you just said, if you look at all the words associated with Esther, it's also in the passive, till the Nafokal part. So it goes along that. I mean, she changes. She goes from the active, from the passive
look at,
to the
look
active.
Look at chapter dot. Look at parak dot.
Right.
Yeah, look at lines, you see? Davi, Krava, Yilbashva, Yitzeva, Yizakva, Yavova. Right? And then Batikrava, Yitzeva, again, fast for me and gather everybody together. Then all of a sudden, hey, someone's changing it. It's like Rus when she goes into Boaz's room and tells him everything he's supposed to do. Naomi said, go into his room. He'll tell you what you should do. And she tells him what to do. You see how Rus goes through that metamorphosis, chapter 3 of that book, like what's happening with Esther does.
Shavuot, you read a Megillah and you say Allah.
So, yeah, that Megillah is just on my neck.
The Sanhedrin goes to give a death sentence?
To?
Anybody?
No. Well, who's getting a death sentence here?
So I'm saying, could they even possibly have sentenced
about... No, Ahasuerus was asking them what to do.
No, Ahasuerus was just asking them what to do.
Yeah, I'm saying that they couldn't have told her to put her to death anyway.
No,
yeah,
right.
It was advice. So would it be
just advising. That's not, they wouldn't be doing it right now. Ahasuerus doesn't need their...
Not, no.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. So, but you see that metamorphosis is a hidden message based on the binyanim that the Megillah likes to use. First three chapters, Nifal, Hofal, and Bual, and then all of a sudden we're getting the metamorphosis of Esther, which of course symbolizes the metamorphosis of the Jewish people. Where you know what? We can talk of gather and have Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza and make a stink, right? We're gonna do something. I don't know if this fasting was taken to the streets or not at the time. Probably not. But they can get, you know, we have some political power. There's always this fear, Zashtil, you know, this will blow over, you know. Mm-hmm. Right? The Ramban says that in Shmos. He says that when Paro put up Sarei Misim and Ve'avidu Osam Beforach, they should have complained then. They get just, all right, this will blow over. Like the Jews in the early 30s. And I spoke to Eric Nussbaum. Remember, he said, we were so sure by 35 the judiciary will take him out. And it's going to blow over. Because it's all right, it's Europe. It's the end of the millennium. We're just experiencing what our ancestors experienced in 1648, in 1240. This is now in Germany. We're just in Kishinev. We just in Ukraine. All right, it's happening here for a year or two and it'll blow over. Right? So now the metamorphosis here is that, you know what? Jews can have, it's not just powerlessness. There's actually some clout. And if you can have it, flex your muscles a little bit. And that's what Mordechai teaches Esther to do. And she does it certainly diplomatically. Right? Okay, mi odea, that's why we're here. Okay, so that's now the second message, which is a political and historical message.
Rabbi, okay. Question. According to the Megillah, though, Mordechai doesn't want to bow down to Haman. So Haman says, well, what's your nation? He's Jewish, so he wants to kill all the Jews. He's kind of responsible for everything.
So that leads to now the third one, which is a religious message.
But saying he's kind of responsible.
To a question now.
Then he wants to...
Rabbeinu Tam
asks you a everybody to fast, right? But he says it's full.
Rabbeinu Tam asks you a question. Rabbeinu Tam says that it's not us to bow to a human being. We see people in the Tanakh. We see people bowing to David the Melech. It doesn't matter whether you're David or Haman, bowing to a human being. If it's us, it's us. Right? It's not forbidden to. It's not forbidden to kneel before the queen while being knighted. As long as you're, it's just an expression of.
It's a political act.
Now, however, if the person makes of him or herself a god, now there's nothing indicated in the story that that's what Haman did. So Rabbeinu Tam just is he taking this out of thin air? What's a medrash that says that Haman had something around his neck, that some kind of tzeilut that indicated that there was some object of worship that Mordechai felt this that he need to avoid. Otherwise, you're absolutely right. Mordechai is acting improperly, putting the Jews in danger. With you, by your actions, you're implicating everybody else who is bowing down to him. What are you doing? So all right, so there's a beautiful, beautiful message here.
He saw how comfortable the Jews were becoming, and he thought, I have to take this action to show right, them we don't really belong here.
Right, so that's very interesting. It's like Shasa Shemad. So let me tell you, if you go through, this is a really great thing if you have time, if you 2 or 3 hours today, just go through all the Torah Tamimas and Esther. Esther Rabbah is a masterpiece. Masterpiece. There are about 30 or 40 of these in all of Esther Rabbah. It's amazing. It's a masterpiece of biblical narrative of connecting Megillat Esther to things all over the rest of Tanakh. In other words, Mordechai doesn't bow to Haman because Binyamin didn't bow to Esav. Heard of that? What does that even mean?
He's
a direct descendant of Binyamin. He's from Sheva Binyamin. And that,
but he wasn't even born.
Right, but still, everybody else did bow there.
I understand.
And it says, Vayivez Esav Esabachora, so Haman it says, Vayivez Be'enav, not to kill Mordechai alone, I'm going to kill all of them. And it shows that there are connections, like Vayitzak Tz'okah G'dolot Mora, where Yaakov takes the bracha from Esav, and Esav reacts with such a bitter cry. And Mordechai's reaction, Yaakov's descendant, over what Esav's descendant does is a very similarly written, which is not a tzaddik, but a Zion by Yitzhak instead of by Yitzhak. So there are about 40 of these. And that's really the moral message. What is a moral message? Is that you're saying, yeah, this is Sinas Chinam brought this out of me. Moral is different than historical in terms of getting messages. The moral message doesn't even have to be true. You know what I'm saying? The true message is that Reuven did a certain thing with Bilhah. Historical message. That's what's written. The moral message is, what was his intention? What did he... That intention was his mother's honor. The rabbis are saying something profound when they say he didn't really sleep with her. He put the couch from one place to another. Because that's how you have to teach it to a third grader who's learning by Yishlach. I don't know. But the point is that what the third grade teacher can teach you, and I remember it, is that Reuven was very zealous for his mother's love, that his father should love his mother. Right? So it doesn't really matter what he did. The rabbis are going to give him a pass on Yishkaves Bilhah, because that's his historical message. The moral message is, right? This is the way the Rambam tends to read Sefer Bereishis and text. The moral message is that I lost my hearing because I listened to Lashon Hara. No, no, you don't lose your hearing because you listen to Lashon Hara. You lose your hearing. You lose your hearing because. So no, but what it is that the moralist says that God would have kept those bad things from happening if I didn't listen to Lashon Hara. I don't know. But, you know, in other words, I was listening maybe to the cell phone too much. Maybe that's why I lost my hearing. Or I was listening to my headphones too loud music when I was 17 for 3 or 4 years. And that's why I'm losing my hearing. But, in other words, that, you know, you're going to say we lost Bayis Sheni because of Sinas Chinam? Really? We lost Bayis Sheni because of an overwhelming force of Roman might that would destroy the fractious Hebrew nation. But what the moralist says is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have let that happen if we were more united. Alright, so there's a moral message and there's an historical. The historical message is, well, there's politics and all these other things. The moral message is that when the Jews get together, Lech Kenosis HaYudim, and you move from Nifal to Kal and Hifil, right, causative and not passive, right? And you move from getting, you know, fasting and gathering, and the Jews, Lech Kenosis Kol Yehudim, is a rally cry. That's what we remember hearing in the 60s and 70s when we were marching for Soviet Jewry, right? So that's the where the text has that hidden message as well. Okay, the religious message is an astounding Gemara on the second page. You see, it says, the hidden message of Esther, what lies beneath the text, religious. See that? Mm-hmm. That's a very famous Gemara that says, Vayisyatzvu besachtis ha'har. The Jews stood, like, you have it translated here also, right on the side.
Okay.
So it's not that they stood at the foot of the mountain, but you see it says literally in the bottom of the mountain. Yeah, under the mountain.
Tachas
sahar, as if though it says they stood under the mountain. A very famous drash. Right, Amar Rav Avdimi Bar Chama Bar Chasa Melamed Shekofa Hakadosh Baruch Hu Aleihem Esahar Kegigis. That God covered them with the mountain as if though it was a vat overturned on top of them. So, and he said, "This is, you'll die right here if you don't accept the Torah." In other words, we were coerced into receiving the Torah as if though if we didn't, we would die. Now, the Bechor Shor in his Perush to the Torah, as well as the Meiri on this Gemara, says that the coercion took on was the form of the miracles. Who would not receive the Torah at that point? Remember, the Gemara says in the Sefer Zohar that God offered the Torah to the Edomites, and they said, "What's in the Torah?" It says, "Don't kill." Well, I can't have a Torah that says "Don't kill." That's what we do, right? And the Bnei Yishmael said, "Don't steal. Forget it. I'm not going to take a Torah that tells me I can't act like I'm used to acting." The Moabites said, "I can't have a Torah that says don't commit adultery. That's just we wouldn't survive with it." Right? So the question is that when the Jews said Nasa v'nishma, right, they didn't ask what's in it. They just said, "We'll do." Right? Maybe what they asked was, "How much does it cost?" They said, "It's for free. Okay, I'll take two of them." So the Jews didn't ask anything. They just said Nasa v'nishma. So Tosfos asks the famous question, the Bali Tosfos to the Torah. So why would they need Kofalei HaKagigis if they said Nasa v'nishma? There's a people that's
the
so.
Miracles,
so that
mountain.
Was Adrabha. That's what was the mountain over their head. The miracles that made them say Nasa Benishma. It's not Akasha. They're working hand in hand.
They didn't say Nasa Benishma until.
Nasa Benishma is.
Talking later.
That's in Mishpatim, but it's, it right. goes back. It's before. That's before Matan Torah. Take a look. Mishpatim goes back to before Matan Torah.
So why,
it's not an order of the Torah.
But that were entirely true, then they don't really deserve any schus for saying Nasa Benishma.
I take you to the deceptive Bava Kama, which is actually here. But that's source number four. This deceptive source number four lists examples of Gnevas Das. Gnevas Das, like cheating on a test. You make your teacher think you know this, but you really don't.
There's Nasa V'Nishma.
Chayim Matsinu, Kishur Yisrael Omdim Lifnei Har Sinai, Bikshu Liknov Das El Yona, Shneamar, Kol Asher Diber Hashem Nasa V'Nishma, Kviyochon Niknav Hulahem. They were stealing from God by saying Nasa V'Nishma. Why?
Because you have to think before you say you
know. Not because they didn't mean it. I assume they meant it. But they weren't invested in it. So when the first problem came,
they were
at source number six, look at source number six.
Their actions proved because of what happened.
Yeah, because the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yesodei Torah, the very beginning of his Mishnah Torah, he says, we don't do anything because we see miracles. We follow because of faith. We follow because of the intellect. That's why the Rambam put Mada before Ahava. That's why the Torah uses Vayeda Elokim.
But is it God's fault then that he doesn't give you enough time? It's too close. They're still, you know what? You have 200 years of slave mentality. You come out, you see miracles. First of all, they didn't see all the miracles. They heard about the miracles. Okay. They saw Yahshua. Now, but they're still slaves. They're complaining from day one.
We don't have water.
We don't have this. We don't have food.
Let's just see. I hear your question. I just see how Rashi responds. Let's see. Rashi on the pasuk Dor Lo Emun Bo. This is a generation without Emunah. So Rashi gives two perushim. It's number six. It's at the end of the Torah. Devaracher, Emun Lashon Emunah, Ketar Gumah. Amru B'Sinai Nasa V'Nishma. They said at Har Sinai, so quick to just do before listening. U'Lashon Kala Bitlu Hiftach Tachasam V'Asua Egel. In a short time, they umavatel that by making an Egel. Right? So right away, they were so quick to say Nasa. What's very interesting, let me just point out something very interesting. Is that the Aseres Dibros are mentioned in Parshas Yisro, and they're also mentioned in Parshas
Veschana.
Parshas Veschana, this amazing thing, you've got to see this, have 13 times the Shoresh of Asiyo to do, and Shmi'o, or Shmira, to hear or to observe, in the same Pasuk. Huh. 13 times. And every single time, not one exception, right? It has Shmi'ah before the Asiyah.
Before what?
The Shmi'ah is before the Asiyah. Nishmatem va'asisem. V'shamata v'osisa. Ushmatem va'asisem. Never v'asisem ushmatem. 13 times. It's a kapara. V'eschanan is fixing Yisro. You cannot, don't rush into things and I once likened it to someone. I say, listen, I have someone to set up with you. And he says, Rabbi, if you think she's a good setup, amen. And she said, don't you want to know anything? But no, Rabbi, if you think she's good, then fine. So I said, you want to see a picture? You want to see anything? He goes, no. If you think she's good for me, I'm going to go ahead. Right? So they go out once, and then, and I call him up and said, well, how did it go? He goes, no, it's not for me. So I said, really? Well, no one tell me? But no, it's just not for me. So I said, maybe try a second date. Maybe you did such a Nasa V'Nishma. Now, I'm not saying this is like rebellion, but you should have asked beforehand a little bit about it. Don't jump into things like this. You should. That's what we. This is true about everything we do. Intellectually connect to something, and then you'll find it much easier to emotionally connect to something.
There's also sort of like on that level where they were in Har Sinai. That was real for them to say. Now they couldn't just skip straight to the doing.
I hear you. I go back to Lenny's problem with that. It's God's business. Why did God set it up that way? I don't want to end the conversation by saying, "Yeah, God." Although that's what Moshe was doing with Hashem also at the Egel. God, you know, you have to take on some responsibility. I want to see your face. You can't do this. Erase me from your book if that's what you're going to do. That's the argument that he gives to God. Right? Okay. All right, so now we have... Now let's just conclude with the religious message. Because the Jewish approach to history is always points to moral. That's why I gave you the triangle there. The historical, that points up to the word moral. Right? Uh-huh. The historical message in Judaism... of course, you have to have pure history. And you have to know what history wants to know. What happened? Right? But history, the Jewish historian always wants to know not just what happened, but why it happened. Like, look at Rashi in Sefer Bereishis. The ancients were all interested in how the world was created. If you look at Sumerian, Babylonian, Egyptian records of Bereishis, they're these long tracts that are very creative. Their practitioners were really sure 4,000 years ago how the world was created. No, Rashi's not interested in that. I'm a Farshim, I'm a Drashim, not interested in that. We're interested in why the world was created. So, I'm not saying we're not interested in history, but when you read Midrashim, you read all these Gemaras, the Gemaras, you know, why didn't we have historians in the Gemara? Because the Gemara why did Bar Kokhba die? When Bar Kokhba died, the Gemara says because he couldn't perform a certain a manifestation of a prophecy in Yeshayahu, so they killed him. So the Lechem Mishneh comments on this, in Machlokas, the Rambam and the Ravid, over whether Mashiach is a supernatural figure or just a human being. Of course, the Rambam says he's a human being. The Ravid says he's supernatural. And the Lechem Mishneh says that the Gemara that says that he died for this moral... Come on, we have in our Midrashim, we have in our sources that he died in battle, in the revolts. The rabbis themselves killed him because he couldn't fulfill a manifestation of a prophecy in Yeshayahu. What does that mean, even? Right? So that, I submit to you that it's not just a machlokis. I'm trying to make peace with these positions.
Maybe right? 70 years, maybe connected with the 70 years Bar Kokhba. So maybe they thought. No, but I'm saying, maybe, I understand, but maybe. They thought it was another 70. They thought maybe.
Oh, they thought that the time was up. Yeah, okay. There's archaeological evidence that they were rebuilding the temple during Bar Kokhba's time.
Yeah.
They minted coins. We have the coins. For 2.5-3 years that they had independence. It didn't end too well, right? But, okay, but the Rambam talks about that also. That was a lot. Okay, so let's wrap things up. We have the political aspect that actually Esther takes advantage of. She's aware of this thing with Vashti in the past with Bavel, right? She never talks like a Vashti. It's always Esther Hamalka, never Hamalka Esther. She doesn't stand up, you know, to like Vashti does. She has no threat of a previous order, right? She knows that but she also is quite aware from her from Mordechai that there was a physical threat to the king's life. She sees it every day, how paranoid. Now, he's not Caligula paranoid. Because if he was Caligula paranoid, he would have killed her and Haman the first night when he couldn't sleep. Right? Why couldn't he sleep that night? He goes, why is Esther inviting Haman? Just Haman. Maybe they want to kill me. Right? This is Mamash the Pshat. The Gemara says this explicitly. But it's Mamash the Pshat. He can't sleep that night, but he asks to bring out the Sefer Zichronos. Did anybody save my life? And he's thinking... Maybe she wants to kill me with Haman. You know, with Beth and Hamlet, if you want to want the kingdom, take the queen, right? And the people will follow you because you're married to the queen. So, right? So, if this is a popular revolt, like the last one I remember,
like the one I carried out,
the one with Bigson and Seresh. So, if you're Caligula crazy or even Stalin crazy, you kill them right there. You're not going to wait to see if this is true, right? Kill your inner circle all the time, like this maniac in North Korea, right? So for the smallest of infractions, even a perceived infraction, right? But he waits it out. He sees that there's a guy Mordechai who who saved my life once, and I said, you know what? Maybe someone else knows about Haman and Esther that are plotting against me, and then maybe they're in on it. Would they tell me if they were in on it? Have you heard that regularly, people in Saddam Hussein's inner circle, regularly, this happened like often, they'd wake him up in the middle of the night with a gun to his head and said, we just killed Saddam Hussein, are you with us or not?
Right.
If he says we're with you, they've killed hundreds of people that way. You have to take your bets right there. Who are you? They'll say, I'm not telling you. Are you with us or not?
Saddam Hussein's secret police.
Anyone he had any inkling. Yeah. He said it at a meeting of generals. He said there was once someone, and I remember reading what it was about. He said, listen, there are threats to your life. You should have doubles. At the end, he did. You should have doubles who look like you to appear in public. That guy's head was at lunch at their on the platter. So his head was right there. No one talks to me like that.
The guy who said he should have doubles.
I mean, he meant his welfare. So Achashverosh, I'm not saying Achashverosh is on his own, that kind of level, but he is very paranoid, and Esther uses his paranoia. She builds up, and this is only Hashem. This is the moral message, is that Hashem sets it up, that when Achashverosh, who purposely asks Haman, what should I do with a man that I want to honor? Knowing that Haman thinks, it's me. It says so in the text, but Achashverosh knows that. So when he hears Haman say, let him wear the crown, let him... So that means that he wants to kill me tonight. He wants my crown. Right? So I can stick it to him both ways. A, it's not you, and B, it's your antagonist. Right? Your antagonist. So he never says so.
Is there a reason why there's 2 days of this party? Like, if Esther's worried that she's going to go to the king and he may kill her. So now she has the... What I'm saying is that she's right.
She's worried double.
How do you know that he's going to come back the second day? Why not...
I agree with you.
That's a really good question.
You got the king's favor day one.
Okay.
Why not ask right away?
Especially
when he said, I'll give you half the empire.
I don't have a good answer for you. The best answer I could come up with is that Esther is prophetic. She took a chance, and she yes, of course she is, and she took a chance, saying, "If I just announce today, it's the king is still. I have to do it. I need another day. I need to get him." She waited. She waited one way or the other. If I get him to think this way another day, maybe he'll kill me tomorrow. But I'm good, and it just works out well because it happens to be just the day where
he couldn't sleep that night for whatever reason.
He can't sleep that night because she asked for a meeting with Haman and then asked for another one.
So he's suspicious of Haman.
Right?
But that was her intent.
Right, but if he doesn't call up Mordechai, right? If she didn't say B'Shem Mordechai, that's what we say when you say B'Shem Omer, you bring Geula to the world. That's where it comes from. Always quote your source. Because she said B'Shem Mordechai. If she just wanted to curry more favor with the king and say, I learned about a threat to your life, then it's not. Then Mordechai's name isn't in that diary.
Right.
And forget it. There's no one can say, hey, Haman wanted to kill. Let's hang him up on the tree. He wanted to kill Mordechai who saved your life. Further proof of his... Right? Right. And then she grabs him to pull her on top of him, and he goes, "Hakoveshes Hamalka Re Malchus Imi Babayas," right?
This is all like that's the whole thing. I mean, she purposely created that jealousy and suspicion.
Exactly.
Like, yes, now, she's part of it too. But
now I want to connect this to another male-female situation in Prophets, because when Devorah tells Baruch ben Avinoam to fight against the Canaanites, he says, "I'm only going to go if you go with me." So he says, because of this, the glory will come to a woman. The rabbis are passive in this story, all the Niphals, right? Since the temple has been destroyed, we don't have counsel. So that's why the glory is going to come to Esther. The name of the book is going to be Megillat Esther. What is this? What's the point? Look at source number 7 and 8 and 9 on the back of the page. It says, Ruyin hayu Yisrael asot lahem nes b'bia shnia k'bia rishona ela shagaram achit. We were supposed to have miracles going back to Israel the second time around after the 7-year galus, but we sinned. What was the sin? He killed Gedaliah. Jews didn't stay in Israel for the 70 years. So the land became very fallow during that time. And it was a big mess. So things got very bad in Israel. But worse, like I said before, things were very good in Persia. So that combination led to a paltry 42,360 people who came back with Ezra. Right? So it says here, in the Gemara at the end of Bracha, at the first parak in Brachas, it says, source number 8. People will no longer refer to me as the God who took them out of Egypt. They'll refer to me, as the God who took them out of the northern nations. Now, what is that? Has that happened already? Right? This is the argument that Ben Soma uses against the Chachamim for saying that Mazkirin Yitzias Mitzrayim Balelos and not Bahavi the Mosa Mashiach, like you say. Right? That's one of the reasons given why the Rambam doesn't count Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim as one of the mitzvahs. Because according to this machlokas, since we do say Yitzias Mitzrayim at night, we do say the third parasha of Shema. We do say Emunah Kozos at night. So it means that Yitzias Mitzrayim will not be the same in Yemos HaMashiach. Right? I'm telling you this because according to this Gemara is not referring to the Persian entry. It's referring to a futuristic event. Right? Ramban in his Parish to the Torah says, no, this is something for right after Yirmiyahu's time. And Bravanel says it's simpler than you think. It's just the way people took oaths. Chai Hashem. When you put your hand on a Bible before then, you would say, as the Lord who took us out of Egypt lives, I swear to say the truth. From then on, they'd say, as the Lord who brought us back from Bavel, that's what they're going to say from now on. It's a simple prophecy. But I say this here because Yirmiyahu does a little later in the book, when he refers to how long we're waiting. Why aren't you coming back to Israel like I'm calling you? And he says, look at source number 9. Ad mosaitis chamokin. How long will you be waiting in him? Will you be disappeared before me? By the way, the Shoresh, Chamak, only appears one other time in the whole Bible. Chamak. To disappear. Who disappears in the Bible? Mamish disappears before your eyes. That's in Haggadah. Yes.
Who?
Shir HaShirim, Perek Hey. That's why Rav Soloveitchik's book about Yemos HaMashiach is called Kol Do Di Do Fake. My lover is knocking on the door. And what does she say when he knocks on the door?
Wait, I can't come.
Go away, I'm sleeping. It's raining, the floor is muddy. Bam, I get my feet wet, right? So he doesn't want to take no for an answer right then.
So he knocks again.
You see, the man is God, the woman is in bed, is Bnei Israel. And so he knocks, keeps knocking, and he breaks through the window, and he opens it from inside. She sees his hand. And she's like, may I hamu alai, my stomach, okay, butterflies, right? A terminology that appears two psukim from here. It's in the Rosh Hashanah liturgy. Al kain hamu mei abein yakuli afrayim imiel shashurim. Right? Zohar is kirenu. That's why this is the Achara of Rosh Hashanah. Right? Al kain hamu mei lo. This is Shir Perakei is right here. And I looked in the concordance. Hamu mei lo only appears in these two places also. When she runs out of bed to get to the door, all of her hair stuff gets on all over her hands, and she fiddles with the door. She can't get it open.
It's too slippery.
And by the time she opens the door,
he's gone.
Three saddest words: "Dodi chomakov." Right? So, and she rushes out to the street to look him. She gets abused in the street, right? So Lemaisa, when Yirmiyahu says, "How long are you going to be disappeared?" I would like to conclude this year by saying that it's a question on Megillas Esther. Rabbis, how long will you remain passive? You've got to teach your people to go out there, make us say something. Don't just let these decrees come upon you without using your greatest effect you can. And don't say we've lost counsel. And don't enjoy the meal that he's throwing for your downfall. Right? Right? What are we so ashamed of if Friedman now is our guy in the, you know, and ambassador for Israel. We're afraid he's a little caustic. Come on, he's going to speak up for us.
All right.
I had to, this is political here. Come on. But here's nice. But here's a big kicker at the end. So you know, this is on tape, so I want to make sure this gets taped, make sure that Mindy hears this. So it's that, what is the thing that it says, how long are you be disappeared here? Is that he says, I'm going to show a new thing in the world. Look, read it. It's in the block letters. Ki bara Hashem chadashah ba'aretz, nekevot tesovev gaver. The new thing is that because the rabbis were so passive, the story is going to be called Megillat Esther. Because Barak, you didn't want to go, it's going to, the glory is coming to, not even me, it's going to be Yael. Right? So when the men are passive, and then they don't want to do counsel, they don't want to say the Sanhedrin has been lost from us. So the story is going to be called Esther. It's going to, and all this is hidden, of course. These are all the hidden, part of the hidden messages. But here's what it is. This is what I'm trying to say for today. Rashi says, the Kevot HaSovev Gaver means that until now, I have always chased after you in the form of all these prophets. Right? Hashkem v'shaloch. I sent you Yeshayo, Amos, Micha, Tzfanya. I sent you Yirmiyo. I sent you Yechezkel. Nobody's home. Right? The most successful prophet in Tanakh is the one who wants to fail. Yom.
Yeah.
Right? So, no, prophets, don't, you know, what are they? Is it just a failed message? Why doesn't the Tanakh tell us about some of their successes? All right, I'll have to answer that another year. But the point is that when I've sent you so many times, you know what? From now on, Nekeva to Sovev Gaver. When the end comes, you're not going to see me so clearly. That's this story. Two, the Malbim says a different shot. The Malbim says that the Nekeva is a feminine Hebrew word, which is the land. Eretz. The land.
Eretz?
Land. Eretz. Oh. Eretz Tova. Eretz is a feminine word. That the land of Israel is going to come out to you. Usually, you know, when you came into Israel the first time, there was a kibush. It was a conquest. Just come into a land. But this time, when you come after the 70-year galus, you will come in without a kibush. Exactly. That's really the manifestation of this. Is that you will come into the land of Israel, and the Persians will just let you go in. That's amazing. That didn't sit well with the Persian anti-Semites, sorry, Yehuda. That didn't sit well with the Persians, right? So that's another truth.
The
Malbim, by the way, in his commentary says that's what our rabbis meant when they talked about the three oaths in Shir HaShirim, that you shouldn't go into Israel if it means that you're violating the space of the Gentiles. You shouldn't rebel against the Gentiles. You should only go with permission. You should go with peace. You should go, don't have a political movement in Israel unless God calls for you, right? We didn't have prophets, right? But that's the religious questions between the Satmar and the religious Zionists. Right. Is God calling us or not? Right? What do you want? A hand coming out of the sky and saying, here I am?
Right.
Is that when you're going to believe? What is it that you're waiting for? Some miracle to happen? Some outright miracle? We just literally started this year by saying that's not the way we should be going. That's the religious message, is that kimu v'kiblu. The Gemara says our obligation to follow Torah is not because of what happened at Har Sinai, but because of what happened in Purim. Because we accepted what God gave us, right? Kimu mashe kiblu kfar. That we accepted it without the coercion, as it were, of Har Sinai above our heads.
But that, right? It says later, it wasn't everybody.
Depends when it happened, maybe most of the people in Eretz Yisrael already.
But the Kibbutz Kiblu means that they accepted this message, accepted this as a group.
That group, not everybody, not all.
Okay.
It's
a large medina.
Some people say it's after the
same. I'm a little bit like, I think that's the concept in my eyes, because if you're saying, depending on when you believe, when it happened. If most of the people were in Eretz, the 42,000 were in Eretz Yisrael already, so. But they didn't pay.
There was still millions who still millions who weren't.
They stayed in Gaulis. So how's that?
Still millions who weren't.
How did that help you? They stayed in Gaulis. Why is that so good?
That's the message. No, it's not.
All around the world.
So why is that a message then?
50-50.
The message is that you're
Jews in Israel.
The message is that you are missing this great opportunity to return that that is being missed for two reasons. Because life in Israel has gotten very bad, because the Jews didn't remain. They killed Gedalia and they were all forced out. And life in Chutz La'aretz has become too good. That's why the Sanhedrin separated from Mordechai at the end. But here's the closing inyan. If you take this literally, the Kevot to Soviet governor, it's not. It has to do with internal messages of Yirmiyahu. But if you take it literally, that what Yirmiyahu is saying is that at the time of the emergence of our return, not only that we're going to Israel, but that God returns to us and openly brings us in, that women will come, will be part of a religious resurgence. Which is more true now than ever before in our history. Women are part of a resurgence, and they're taking that active role, like women, you see that Esther did. Then all those Kal and Hifil verbs replacing all the Hofala, these are all hidden messages within the story. So when the rabbi said, Nochi Astir Astir Panai Mikem, is that the heroine is going to be a woman because the men said we don't have counsel. And it's a little similar to what we saw with Deborah and Barak. And that's actually a trend you find with all the seven Neviot. All the men that they encounter, given this in the share before, the men, they think of it, well, they count all seven. Sarah and Abraham. When they clash, Hashem tells Amram, listen to Sarah. Miriam and Amram. Amram says we have to depart from our wives. And Miriam convinces him that's not the way to go. Right? And you can go all through Deborah and Barak, as we just did before. Right? And Chana and Eli. Eli is mistaken about her. She has to show him what the right way is. Right? Abigail and David. David wants to kill off her whole family and everybody there with it. And she has to convince him. And he tells her afterwards that because of you, I know I'll become king. If not, if I didn't listen to you, I wouldn't have become king. Gemara and Shabbos darshens it that way. It would have been a pukav l'chai. It would have been a stumbling block. You never would have become king if you had taken out your vengeance for killing my whole family. And Chulda and Yirmiyahu. They don't send Yirmiyahu to interpret the text. They send Chulda. Every one of them is surrounded by a prophet or a husband or a colleague or something else, right? And the woman in every instance is the one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying that the glory will come to the woman who took the active role. Amram, passivity, divorcing women so we don't have children. It's the woman who has to tell him the Kevah to Soviet Gover. So I think that's we'll close with that, and especially since my wife is here.
Why are you calling Ben Korach and his wife, or
that's Ben Pelas you're talking about?
No, but Korach.
I'm not saying that every case.
Ben Pelas, yes, his wife.
By the way, Yechezkel also talks about the women who are crying for the Tammuz and they're weaving tapestries for the Avodah Zarah. That's yes. B'tzeisi mi Mitzrayim, the women with Sidkanios. B'tzeisi mi Yerushalayim, not so much.